Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this podcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you are feeling a little radio shy, you can write to me at bonkay@aol.com, that's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com, and I'll be happy to give your questions to my guest for tonight. We'll talk to in just a moment. I just wanted to make a couple of announcements to remind people that our healing weekend is not too far away from now. It's already going to be March next week, and our healing weekend will be 6 or 7 weeks away, so time is running short. It's going to be a wonderful healing weekend for many women who are part of our support network, who have been in our support network or just joining our support network. We'll have wonderful workshops with women who are professional therapists who work specifically in this field. We're also doing a whole day of sharing and caring and learning to bond with each other. You'll be making some new friendships, renewing some friendships, and I am just so excited because I'm going to see some of the women I love the most there and meet some of the ones that I've been waiting to meet. So if you'd like to join me and you'd like to find out more, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you the information. Also, I want to send our love and best wishes to Jen, who's in her healing process. We all have our love going out to you, Jen. I like to mention that each week because we're all thinking about you all of the time. And also, for any women who are really hurting, I want to let you know that there's a lot of support that's out there for you. I read letters every day that break my heart And I never want someone to feel like she's alone. If you need support, it's out there for you. Just let me know. Write to me. I'll be happy to hook you up with more support than you'll ever know what to do with. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce a woman who's a phenomenal woman whom I love. I've been lucky enough to have the pleasure of meeting her several times. I have her beautiful picture in front of me every day while I read her book, Love Yourself to Health with Gusto. Her name is Janine Finelli, and welcome, Janine. Welcome back.
Thanks, Bonnie. It's so great to be back with you and all of the women. Thank you.
I know, Janine, you are so inspirational to our women when you've done workshops at our Healing Weekend, teaching us about the importance of not only mental health, but physical health as well, because you are a health coach, a physical health coach. And one of the things I will tell you about Janine is that she is just so wonderful in the way that she gives wonderful, helpful ways to improve your physical health. Because when you're going through a situation like this, when you're going through, you know, your whole drama and shock and life being turned upside down with a gay husband, a lot of times you look to relieve your pain in ways that are unhealthy ways. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree with you, Bonnie. You've been there, I've been there, and that's what my book was born from. That trauma that leaves you feeling neglecting yourself in every way. So, yes, I totally agree.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you can tell people a little bit about your story now, Janine, just so they can understand that you've been through this also.
Yeah, I've been through this. And my marriage was 10 years. The relationship was about over 12. And like so many of you, never saw it coming. Always thought it was me. Always thought I wasn't doing enough. Always thought I wasn't saying the right things. Always thought that I was life's biggest loser of a wife because this person was just completely miserable. So, I started to question myself, my own behavior, and the type of mother that I was, and the type of wife that I was. And, you know, when I reached out to Bonnie, it was, I moved out in 2013, so this June will be 3 years. And when I reached out to Bonnie, it was about a year before that, and was absolutely amazed because I just sat down at my computer and started banging out, you know, this letter to this woman that I just found on the internet, and I poured my heart and my guts into this letter, and it just probably was so long. And she wrote me back. The next morning I had a reply, and it was just, I cried because I just thought, wow, like it didn't get lost in cyberspace. Somebody actually heard me and didn't think I was nuts. And so she replied to me, and it made so much sense. And, of course, anybody who knows Bonnie knows that she will tell you exactly what you need to hear while totally giving you a virtual hug. So she, you feel her love come through, but she's also being very honest, and that was what I needed. So that's...
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I just don't believe in giving people false hope. And when they're looking for it, I just send them elsewhere because, mm-hmm. you know, I have my beliefs based on 35 years of having experience with this and
right.
tens of thousands of women who have suffered through this. And I just don't believe in keeping people suffering longer than they have to. And I always say that every day you lose in your marriage to a gay husband is a day you can never get back. And so many mm-hmm. of us just sit there suffering, not knowing why we're suffering. And Janine, some people haven't met you, obviously, who are listening to this show, or
mm-hmm.
haven't bought your book yet, which they need to buy so they can look at your beautiful cover. But
aww.
Janine is definitely one of these Barbie dolls that you look at and you think, oh, my God. This is really a trophy wife when you look at her. She could be a movie star. That's how beautiful she is, not only inside, of course, outside also. And you think, boy, you know, how could this ever happen to such a beautiful woman who must have had a lot of self-confidence, who claims she came from, and, you know, I know that you came from a very stable, loving family. You know, what were the signs you missed? But I always say to women that you have to stop beating yourself up, because when you meet these guys, they're great actors. They're on their very, very best behavior. They're on their very best game. So how would we have known? Do you feel that's true?
I do, and I really, that's such a big reason why I have, why I wrote the book and why I dedicated it to you the way that I did, and why I continue to show up when you ask me to be there. I'm there because even though I'm a couple years out from that experience, I will never, ever forget what it was like to be chewed up and spit out by the one person that you give your vows to, and I will never forget what that feeling was like. So, yes, and people were surprised after the fact. People, there's a little bit of a reverse prejudice with, like, you thank you for all of the compliments, Bonnie. There's a little bit of a reverse prejudice, like, oh, things can't be that bad. I mean, you don't have a diaper bag hanging off you, and you don't have a black eye, and you don't look disheveled, and you're not dragging yourself to the grocery store, but you're showing up because you have clients, and you have children, and you have needs, so you're dressed, and your makeup done, and you're bebopping around, getting things done, but on the inside, you're dying. So there is this reverse prejudice that's like, oh, it really can't be that bad. She must have caused this somehow. And believe it or not, that does start to seep into your own psyche, where you start to think, did I bring this on myself? How did I contribute to this whole scenario unfolding? So I completely agree, completely.
Now, when you met your ex-husband, I mean, he obviously wasn't a nasty, mean guy. You wouldn't have been attracted to somebody like that, right?
You know, that's such a good question. I think I just didn't love myself 15 years ago, because now I would never look twice at somebody who even looked at me that way or spoke to me in that tone. I would never even give that person the time of day. So I asked myself, what was different about me then? I didn't have boundaries. I didn't have clear-cut boundaries. Eleanor Roosevelt says, no one can make us feel inferior without our consent. And I kind of consented to that behavior by not setting the record straight the first time. So at first, when I met him, he was nice and, you know, was very good to my son, which was a bit very important thing. Anybody out there who's a single mom, you know, you're thinking, wow, this is one guy who just, you know, actually doesn't mind hanging out with my kid too, you know? And so that was a big thing. But then as soon as we got engaged, he was short, he was angry, he was like sweating bullets whenever we'd talk about the wedding, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, what's really gotten into you? But then he probably would recognize that he was dismantling the relationship, and he'd smooth things over real fast. And even though my love language is not gifts, he'd go out and he'd buy something, and then he'd apologize and he'd say, oh, I'm so sorry. I've been so busy at work. I'm so sorry. I was stressed. And so you start to say, oh, okay, Janine, you know, you need to have some patience. You need to be kinder. Uh-huh. The guy's under stress. And so you kind of take it on yourself, because it's the pendulum. He's either mad or he's apologizing. And so then we got engaged, and then we got married. So I didn't have a lot of time to really see that cycle of behavior play out, where I was like, wow, dude, you're saying the same stuff and the same thing's happening, because we got engaged and got married so fast after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think a lot of it was because you, as a person, you're a kind and loving person, so you like to forgive, you like to think this will pass, this will change. That once again, when your husband's stressed out or they're having a bad day, and you just feel like if you could just be more supportive. I remember feeling like, what can I do to make him feel better? Why does he always feel like this? You know, right. What am I not doing right that he has to feel so depressed or angry or frustrated? Why can't I change that in him?
Mm-hmm.
But I think both you and I were married, or, you know, you had a child before I was married. I was married before, and I didn't have great success in that marriage either, you know. So
mm-hmm.
for me, I think sometimes we jump, and, you know, we were young in our 20s or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
We jump into things thinking that we can fix it and make it right. And I think many of us are like that. We really do believe we can fix everything. But, of
right.
course, you know, you can't fix broken men, as I say. They can only break you. And that's
right.
what happens, right?
Totally. And you taught me this, Bonnie, that they kind of seek our personalities out, don't they? They
yes,
kind of
absolutely.
Look for people. They don't want anybody that's going to toe a hard line and anybody that's going to call them out on their behavior. They really
mm-mm.
do go after people who are, sometimes they go after people who have children. And because that's such a huge part of, that was such a huge part of my life that,
mm-hmm.
you know, or they really do go after a certain type of personality that's a nurturing, bending, constantly forgiving, overlooking, because we're the glue that keeps everything together, and they know that we're going to just be super glue. They know that.
That's why, so ironically, I would say at least 80% of the women who are part of our network of tens of thousands are in some form of human services, social workers, mental health workers, teachers, doctors, nurses, counselors, somewhere within the helping profession, and, you know, it takes a special kind of person to do that. And I think on a conscious or subconscious level, these guys are looking for that so that when things don't go right, that they'll have somebody there who's not going to berate them, but somebody who's going to internalize, maybe they can make it better for them. And
mm-hmm.
I think in many cases, when they do marry us, they're looking for some quick fix that maybe we're going
right.
to be able to, you know, fix whatever these feelings are they're having. And, you know, they can learn to love us enough that those attractions to men aren't going to be there anymore. But
mm-hmm.
instead, what it happens is they start resenting us, and they start feeling as if we're locking them in and stopping them from what they want to do.
Somewhere
there's a breakdown in their psychology. Instead of being internal blame, it's external blame, and we're the ones they're blaming. Would you agree with that?
Right. I would totally agree with that from my own experience and from the stories that I've heard and all of the situations that you put in your own book. I mean, those books,
mm-hmm.
when I ordered your books, I had them sent to a girlfriend's house because I was petrified of anything like that coming to the house at that time, and I had them sent there, and I couldn't wait when she called me, and just the stories in there were so relatable, and so I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more on that. And they do. They feel like we are going to, I mean, in my particular situation, my ex always dated somebody who had kids, too, because
mm-hmm.
it was just easier. It was a distraction. You can blame, you can easily say, well, we don't have time because there's a kid here, or, you know, it's a family vacation. It's not a romantic weekend, you know.
Oh, that's
every,
so true.
Yeah.
So many distractions when you have children.
Yeah.
So many distractions, and then you don't have to sit and apologize for them. You know, you have a
right.
built-in excuse. We can't be doing that. The children are around. We have to be, you know, I'm tired from the kids. You know,
right.
very often the children are the excuse. And
right.
I do believe that some of these men initially can perform sexually with women. Obviously, we have children from them. But as time goes on, it just becomes so much more of a chore for them. You know, as their sexuality becomes more defined. And I think this is the problem with homosexuality, that for everyone, it's not so clearly defined at birth. You know,
mm-hmm.
people have to grow into it because they're fighting it, because they are, some gay men in their 20s are definitely able to perform, or in their 30s or even 40s with a woman. Sometimes
right.
they enjoy it in their 20s. By the time they're in their 30s, they're fantasizing that it's not you, it's somebody else who's there. They can pull
mm-hmm.
it off, but that's what's happening. They're pulling it off. And I always tell our women, just as we're always thinking about and fantasizing about how we can get our husbands to make love with us, they are spending just as much time thinking about how they don't have to do it. How are they going to get out of it? What's their new excuse going to be? How are they going to reject you this time? Why don't you just stop asking all the time?
Right.
And what's perfectly normal for us to feel as women, and I think this is what I resent the most, is the stopping of that feminine spirit that, you know, are taking that away from us. And I know that's something that you truly believe in, right?
Totally.
And your feminine spirit.
Yeah. I mean, I write about that in the book, too. I had never had an experience with a quote-unquote man that was just not being like a normal guy. And so you find yourself in that situation, and of course you do internalize it and you think it's you, and you know, every excuse under the sun, there's a glass on the counter and you're all of a sudden the worst housewife in the world. And meanwhile, you know, you have a cleaning lady too. And then this, you know, this person comes home and finds something wrong, something to blame it on. And it's never about you, it's about them just trying to find an excuse and to blame it on you. But when you're in it, it's heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking because, like you said, you're trying to understand, okay, so you cooked dinner and the house is spotless and the homework's done and there's not even a shred of any, you know, homework paper on the kitchen table, and every single thing is what they've asked for. You give them exactly what they asked for and they still come home and just start a fight with you over anything. And it's heartbreaking to be in that situation, because for me, and I know for probably all, I don't want to speak for everybody, all the women that I've come across in this network take those vows seriously, and they want to be good wives and they want to be good homemakers and good an influence on their children and all of those things, and it kills them. It killed me. It killed me to have it crumble, even though I knew there was nothing. I couldn't do the work of two people. I was only one person in the marriage, and it took two, but it did. It killed me, and it's heartbreaking. And that's why I show up for these calls and for your conferences and for any woman who reaches out to me, because I will always remember that pain. And when I talk about that feminine spirit that dies, it's like, you know, the one person who should make you feel like $1 million doesn't. In fact, being with them, being in bed with them, is horrible, and it makes you feel horrible. And It gets to the point where you're like, why am I even asking for this? And then it goes into a whole nother layer. Is it your belief on marriage? Is it a religious belief? Is it, you know, is it cookie cutter behavior of what you're supposed to do and how you were raised? And so you start to peel back all of these layers, and then you realize, I'm totally not living the life that I feel I should be living.
You know, if you don't mind, I'd just like to read a couple things from your book, because I love your book. I use it as my guideline, and I know you might find that hard to believe, but I'm always looking for healthier tips and things
so
to make
honored.
Me feel better, and I keep going back, and I talk to people about your book. You know, I show them different things you have in here, and of course, I've learned a lot from you, you know, just physically, health-wise, physically, you know, as far as health. But in your book, when you're first telling your story, one thing that just moved me so much, because when I did read it, to be honest with you, I think I told you originally, it made me cry. That's how, you know, I felt for you. But here you have in your book, in the beginning, you know, recognizing destructive relationships. I find it fascinating that for some people, the quest for wellness can begin with the simplest of shifts, such as routine exercise program or adding more dark leafy greens to their diet. As the years go by, the same people who have made a small shift are now exercising almost daily, making gorgeous green smoothies at home, and have finally said no to a relationship that has them feeling broken. The bottom line is that destructive relationships rob you of every security that you want to feel. They intimidate and suffocate you and have you believing on some sick level that this is what you deserve. Every human being has the ability to be difficult or destructive at times. After all, nobody's perfect. I think that all of us have the capacity to wound another soul. A quote that comes to mind is, people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Boy, it sure seems that there are plenty of people out there who are quickly forget they aren't perfect, yet they're willing to be downright condemn others. Saying something intentionally hurtful to your partner you wish you hadn't is surely something everyone can relate to. However, I think the difference between difficult and destructive lies are the after moments. The destructive person will never feel remorse or guilt for saying words that hurt. If they happen to apologize, it will never be in a love language that speaks to you. Why? Because they tend to apologize to make themselves feel better, not you. Or they do it to create the illusion of an empathy that they really don't possess. The terms narcissistic and sociopathic surely come to mind here. These types of people always portray one image, yet under their facade, they personify lies and completely altered personality with an agenda. And that agenda doesn't include less strife and more kindness in their relationship with you. Destructive personalities exhibit outgoing displays of one or more of the following characteristics: emotional abuse, verbal abuse, physical abuse, neglect, and financial control. They demonstrate a pattern of abuse through hiding, misleading, pretending, neglecting, and telling untruths while they all weave a web of confusion around you. Before long, they're telling you that the reason things are spiraling downward and that if you would change, things would improve. It's a well-thought-out game in many of them, and after a while, you actually begin to believe you can change the situation, but you're wrong. I mean, I think that women need to know that these guys are exactly like you say. They're playing a game, that they don't have the empathy and they don't have the love that you keep thinking that is under there, and it's not. Would you agree with that?
Yes, it's that apologizing, or, you know, maybe it's a dinner, maybe it's a flower, maybe it's a bottle of perfume, maybe it's a hug, maybe it's some really bad sex or something, but whatever that apology is, they're thinking in their head, how will this make me look?
Mm-hmm.
How will this get me off the hook? Will this buy me 2 weeks of not being bugged? How will this make me look? It's not coming from that same place, which is why we get roped in, because we're thinking, oh my God, he's sorry. He would never do that if he wasn't sorry. But that's
mm-hmm.
that's our perspective. That's totally not theirs, because it is a game. It is a well-thought-out game. And how will they look? What kind of light will they be seen in? And what do they win from apologizing? And that's the sad truth, is that's the truth.
Mm-hmm. Now, Janine, you went on to become, you know, a health coach, and you were trained by the top-line people in this field. I was just wondering, from your opinion, when you go through this kind of trauma, I mean, we see ourselves that women say they gain weight, they lose weight, they're drinking, they're taking drugs. You know, you take on some really destructive behaviors that you may not have taken on ahead of time because this could drive you to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, did you find yourself also doing that?
I did. I found myself, and I, you know, I'm the first one to say I drank too much wine. It kind of just, quote unquote, took the edge off. But I was drinking too much wine every day, and I was taking sleeping pills because I couldn't go to sleep. I had such sleep problems living in that same house, and coffee whenever I needed energy, and then maybe, you know, not eating nutritiously the way that I should, always trying to, because then I became a health coach, but definitely the sleeping pills. And, you know, there was even a time probably it was, I think it was even before I got pregnant with my daughter, because I got pregnant, I was dating him for a year. We were engaged, and then I got pregnant with my daughter, which was definitely a miracle. And I remember taking some painkillers that were in the house because I literally had to numb myself. And when I stopped to realize what I was doing, I thought, wow, I know I love myself somewhere in there, and I know that this behavior isn't good for the longevity of Janine and the longevity of Janine, that's the mother. And so I understand all this. What am I doing? Why am I hurting myself when this person's going on with their life, doing their thing? And so, yeah, it's very, people do, they gain weight and or they lose so much weight or their blood pressure goes up and you're in such coping and survival mode that the last thing mm-hmm. you're thinking about is making yourself a smoothie and cutting back on the sugar and God forbid you ever fill up the bathtub and sit in there for 30 minutes. I mean, the world will fall apart. So we're not thinking like that. It's day to day. Keep the face on. Get the kids where they need to be. Not let anybody in because we don't have answers, so we don't want questions from people who are going to have, you know, we don't want questions from people. So it's just this facade that we wind up facilitating ourselves.
So you changed your life around. You found ways that you weren't going to do this anymore to yourself, that you were going to go to do whatever you had to
mm-hmm.
to become healthy again. Realizing that physical health is very much tied in with mental health, right?
Totally. They're hand in hand. Your soul can't be happy if you're under a nutritional slaughter attack with your body, and your body, your peace of mind and your energy and your sleep and all that isn't going to be intact if you're not fueling yourself with things that your body can recognize as food. And so I always felt I was a health coach. I became a health coach in 2007. I graduated in 2008. And I had a lot of the food stuff, you know, in line with what was considered healthy. But I felt like life's biggest fraud in a way because I had to do the biggest detox of my life, and that was to shed this person that was destroying me and destroying my life and destroying my marriage and turning me into somebody that I didn't like. So I felt a little hypocritical on that front, so I really had to do the biggest detox of my life and kind of unzip myself and step out of myself, which was excruciating in so many ways, but I chose me, and some days were better than others, but I started to say, you know what, I felt like God gave me a window, and it, you know, people say God sends a boat. Whether you jump in it or not is your own business, right? So I felt like I mm-hmm. had an opportunity to really create something. So I remember thinking, okay, I'm in this house with him. I have a home. Right now, the bills are being paid. How am I going to use this situation to my advantage? There's so much negativity and so many bad things going on, but I kind of focused on the positive, and I created a life within a life, and I got my training, and I tried to build my business. And in the meantime, I really tried to hold myself accountable because I just thought, I pictured myself holding myself as a baby. How would I treat that baby? What would I want for that baby? And I really had to connect to my inner child and nurture myself all over again, which I hadn't done ever.
One of the things that I've learned from you is that there's so many things that you can do to really make major changes in your life, and I know this is based on your own experiences at work, and that's why I really urge people to look at Janine's book, which you can find, you know, in any, you know, outlet online, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Love Yourself to Health with Gusto. We can all remember Love Yourself to Health, but add the mm-hmm. with Gusto. And it's an ABC guide for surviving a toxic relationship. That's the subtitle. But wonderful things that are in this book, and I love the way Janine organized it because it's so easy to read because it's all alphabetical. Under every letter, there's something in there that's just so interesting and so informative. And just being around Janine, I really learned a lot about bad choices I make, and I've really tried to improve upon them. But just to give people some examples, something that's, you know, simple, something that's less complicated, more complicated, you know, there's just such a glossary here. Like, for instance, if you look under the A's, just at the beginning, because everything, once again, is in, you know, order as far as alphabetical, So, like with A, you're starting with aloe vera. Now, tell us a little bit about aloe vera.
Yeah, it's such a, everybody thinks of aloe vera, you know, when it comes to sunburn and skin damage and things like that, and it's wonderful anti-inflammatory properties for your skin. And what I want people to take away from that is what it does for your skin, it does for your insides. It's cooling, it's calming, it's healing. It's wonderful for digestion and, you know, acid reflux. And so aloe vera is, you can buy different aloe vera juices, and I talk about which ones are better than others in the book. But, you know, when you drink that, it's again, it's great for digestion and helps anybody who's familiar with probiotics. It really kind of creates a nice landscape in the gut for probiotics to survive and thrive. I mean, that's our immune system. So aloe vera is wonderful. And so when you think about it, don't just think about, you know, putting it on. I have an organic $5.99 plant from Whole Foods. I have it in my room, and it's organic. Mm-hmm. And it's an organic soil because, you know, there's a lot of chemicals in there. You don't want to put them on your face or eat them. So you always want it to be organic, but it's wonderful for lines around the eyes. And it's so funny because, you know, people have said, gosh, you know, you look younger. And I'm thinking, wow, that's really great. It must be my $5.99 aloe and, you know, some of the other things that I do, because it really is amazing for the lines around your eyes, a little dab, you know, three or four times a week before you go to bed. So aloe vera is wonderful for the skin. It's wonderful internally. You can put it in smoothies. You can drink it. It's just great. It's,
now, can
it
you
really
put the same one on your eyes that you're drinking? Is that the same thing?
Well, it depends on the brand.
Are they separate?
Yeah, it depends on the brand. Now, I always recommend to people you can get it just a cheap aloe vera plant, literally. You know, like this one I got from Whole Foods is $5.99, and it's in my room, and I just snip it off and stuff. Or there's different ones you can buy. Again, like with anything else, aloe vera is increasingly, you know, growing in popularity. So you want to look at the bottle. You don't want an aloe vera drink or any other drink for that matter that's got 10, 15, 20, 30 grams of sugar in it, because you just want the lower sugar ones always. Save the sugar for something good, right, Bonnie?
Absolutely. Then we have the aromatherapy under A. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, aromatherapy. I just talk about, let's see, I've got my book here. You know, the book is about how to think in a non-toxic way, how to eat in a non-toxic way, and how to, you know, just make non-toxic choices with people as well. So when it comes to aromatherapy, I just talk about how smell is so important, and whether it's lighting a candle or, you know, making a pumpkin pie in your home. And you know, it's a very, very important sense. And they say that it's the strongest one connected to memories. So whenever I was feeling really awful and depressed and, where is this road going to wind up? Because I don't know, like you said, I feel like I'm Alice in Wonderland. Which end is up? Which end is down? So aromatherapy would always just kind of help center me. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I want all of the people on this call to realize that it really is those little things that sometimes it's the big thing, but sometimes it's these little moments that recalibrate us and, you know, and kind of bring us back to our own neutrality, where we can stop and think and make decisions. And it's these kind of moments that were huge for me. So that's why I included aromatherapy in the book.
Then you go from really physically, you know, helpful things on the, we're still on our A's, to a word like ask,
right,
which is part of a process also. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, ask. That was so, as it says, so many of us have been conditioned as a result of our chronic adversity to be so independent and self-sufficient that it terrifies us to ask for help. And I think, you know, those of us in this group in particular, we have these invisible tapes, and we are just so used to juggling. We wouldn't know what it's like to ask for help. My entire family is in New York, everybody's in New York. And my friends here in North Carolina, they all have lives and kids and jobs and spouses and responsibilities, and they're carting 2, 3, 4 kids around to soccer like I was at the time. So you kind of go into this little space where you don't reach out to people. But it's so important to find, even if it's just one person that you can ask for help, that's not going to judge you, that's just going to be like, yeah, babe, I got this, don't worry about it. And in the book, I talk about all the things I asked for, and they might seem so trivial. It was, you know, do you have any coffee creamer, to my neighbor across the street, because, you know, I just needed some and I was out. Or can you pick up medicine because my daughter's sick? Or can I borrow your dryer because mine broke? Or, you know, can you look into this job for me? All of those things. So asking for help from somebody is so important, because we just can't do it alone. We can't do it alone.
I agree, and it's so overwhelming to us when you're first on your own. And just to add on to that, asking for support when, you know, the breakup finally comes. I think I got through that first week because I surrounded myself with people who cared about me. If I would have had too much time to think on my own, or if I would have been alone with just the kids who were like babies practically at that time, I think I would have probably really gone into a deep depression. But just having people around me to focus on, don't be afraid to ask for help once you're in the situation, and don't be afraid to ask for it while you're just starting to go through it. You know, the more people who can be part of your support system, the healthier it's going to be for you.
Right.
Even for little things, like you were saying, little things become overwhelming when you have no help.
Me
I know that
too.
When my ex-husband left me, I had no car. You know, he took the car. I had no telephone. He billed up the bill, so it was shut off. You know, I felt so isolated and so alone that I couldn't, you know, make a call or go somewhere without, you know, taking a bus with two little babies. It was very overwhelming for me. So luckily I had good family that helped me, and, you know, sisters that took me places that I had to go, because I really felt very lost. So you have to learn how to ask. I think that we're so shut down during our marriages. Would you agree with that, Janine, and not asking because we keep getting turned down and rejected?
We are, and I think there's that, for me, I had, you know, I look at it and I say, I have to own my piece of it. My piece of it is trying to live the life that it looked like I was living. And what I mean by that is, you always think everybody's so happy. You always think everybody, you know, nobody else has problems. And so you just kind of dumb down and shut up and don't say anything because, you know, you're involved in a particular social life or whatever is going on, and you just kind of, so my own contribution to prolonging the whole thing was being afraid to be different, being afraid to be the one who was divorced, you know, when your kid is at Catholic school, being afraid to be the one who is just built a beautiful home and is now has a big U-Haul, whatever, pulling in the driveway and moving, being afraid of what other people were going to think. And that's when I needed to love myself more than care about what other people thought. And so I prolonged, not that I willingly prolonged it, but it's scary. It's scary to pull that plug and then all of a sudden, you know, you have to deal with it. So I didn't. And when I did move 3 years ago, I'll never forget my friend. She called me up and she's like, okay, we're coming to your house, and we're, you know, she named two other friends, and we're coming and we're bringing you lunch, and we're going to move the TVs today, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And bam, 3 hours later, I had all this stuff in my apartment, so I was able to move and shift. And I had people who loved me, whether I was living in an apartment or living in a gorgeous home, it didn't matter. And those women are still in my life today. They've been my friends since our kids are 20 years. So I really am so grateful for the friends that have shown up with, you know, jeans and moving, you know, ready to move. And then we can still go out and clink glasses and have a glass of wine. And so it's really important to identify those people, who's in your corner. And if you've got one, that's really all you need, is someone you can share and vent and be yourself with.
You know, I'd like to just ask you a question since you brought this up. You moved mm-hmm. from a nice home into an apartment. Mm-hmm. Many times I have women who say to me, I can't leave because I'm going to give up my beautiful home. Mm-hmm. And I always feel very angry when I hear that, because you can have a house of horrors. It doesn't matter how beautiful the outside or the inside is. If you're writing to me because you're miserable and you're unhappy,
right.
and
right.
you can't find any peace of mind within this home, and you decide you want to stay there because you're not giving it up, I mean, I just don't understand that message. I really don't. Because
right.
I moved from a home into a one-room apartment, and I was, you know, happy. Or even with
right.
my kids, you know, I had to give up a house and move into a small place. But it was a place of peace and peace of mind. And I
totally.
Think that's worth everything in the world. I mean, how can you just judge your life by the external, you know, building you're living in? I never quite get it, do you?
By stuffitis, right. I when I moved to this apartment, and honestly, my kids, my son loves this so much. He's in college now, and he's like, Ma, you know, when you move from here, can we keep this place? Because they just love it. I've come to learn that home is a feeling, not a place. Home is the people. You know, home is, my parents have a home in New York, and there could be 20 people there, and we're all in the kitchen, and there's no room for anybody, but it's the best kitchen on the planet because that's where everybody wants to be, you know? And then I think back to the home that I left, and a lot of people were like, wow, aren't you going to miss your home? Why are you leaving your home? You know, he's the one who should leave. He's the one who did this. And I was like, you know what? He can keep this. I'm taking what I need, and I'm out of here because I can't stay in this house anymore. And so for me, when I got into my apartment, I will never forget, and I think I shared this with you once. I was here probably a month or two, and I was doing laundry, and I was whistling. And my son was watching TV, and he looked at me, and he goes, Mom, now this could make me cry, Bonnie. He's like, Mom, listen to yourself. And I was like, oh, my God, I am so freaking happy doing the laundry. This isn't even funny.
Uh-huh.
And I was so happy, and I could, like, cook and do the laundry pretty much all from the same spot because it's cozy, but it just represented freedom and peace and love and tranquility, and the vibe here is just amazing, and I have the most beautiful view of ducks in a pond, and oh, I am so, so, so grateful. I am so grateful. I would have thought I would have lived in a teepee if I had to. I would have.
You know, one of the things that impressed me so much when I met you was the fact of what words you have tattooed on your arms. And so you really put that message out there. And, of course, I use it all the time to tell people. I tell people about you and about what you have on there in beautiful writing, of course. But the message is love is kind. And you know what? I think in three words that sums up everything that people need to know about the word love. That when people are mistreating you, that's not love. When people are berating you and making you feel you're not good enough, that's not love. When people are neglecting you, whether it be emotionally, sexually, physically, however it's being done, that is not love, because like you say, love is kind.
Mm-hmm.
And was that like a guiding force for you, those words?
It totally was, and I'll never forget. I knew I wanted to get a tattoo for a long time, and I woke up that day, and I had a million things to do, and I had already known the place that I was going to go to, and I went down there, and I said, is so-and-so there, the tattoo artist, I forget his name, and they're like, yeah, and I said, well, I need to get in with him now. I have to pick up my daughter from school. And they're like, really? Like, you don't want to make an appointment? I'm like, no, this needs to be done today. It just dawned on me. And that's kind of how I am. Like, it has to happen now. Like, if, you know, it's like I don't make hair appointments. I wake up and I'm like, I got to get my hair done, like now. So he did it. And he did love is on one wrist and kind on the other. And I got that for two reasons. I got that to remind myself, ladies, that I was not being kind to myself. If I love myself, then I'm not going to be treated the way that I was anymore. And so I need to be kind to myself. That means saying no when I need to say no, saying yes when I need to say yes, knowing the difference between the two, nourishing my body with, like, with food that's going to help it sleep and give it energy and not give me digestive problems and not make me too thin or too overweight, make me feel good, not raise my cholesterol, not give me high blood pressure, all of those things, because I wanted to have energy and I wanted to sleep. And I would have taken that any day over a winning $1.5 billion lottery ticket, because I just wanted to feel good. So I got it for that reason, and I got it so that my kids would know, you know, love is kind. So if you ever have to ask yourself, does this person love me? The answer is very, very simple. If they're nice and they're, you know, not that, let's say you meet somebody and they're nice, that doesn't mean they love you, but, you know, in a love, romantic relationship, people make mistakes, but then they apologize and then they try not to do it again. So it's really very, very simple, and it all comes down to that for me. And I hope that my kids can decipher when they're older what's love and what's not, what's codependency, what's dependency, what's needy. So none of those things are love. And I was living in a relationship for over 10 years that I was trying to say was love, and it wasn't.
You know, I think what you did is you really hit it on the head there. How important is it for children to see their parents be role models as far as what's acceptable behavior and what's not? Because I feel that, you know, as I tell everyone, I had a man who just wrote to me from another country tonight, and he said, well, if I tell them the truth, is it going to destroy their lives? And, you know, as I tell every woman who writes to me, if you had a daughter and, you know, children model themselves after their parents, what they see at home becomes their reality. And if mm-hmm. you're willing to put up with people abusing you or not treating you correctly, that becomes their normal. And when they meet someone, it's the legacy that we leave behind for them, that they pick someone who has similar behavior and characteristics, and they think, this is what I'm supposed to do. And so they do model themselves after you, and you do have to set the example. Do you believe that's true?
I do, and I will say that breaking up a marriage, and when there's kids involved, is like a Mack truck running over your heart. And you get that, Bonnie, I get that, and I hope for all the listeners to know that I understand that space that kills you like nothing else does. And it breaks my heart all over again to think about anybody who's in that situation, and that was me. And I had to take that leap, because truly my daughter and my son would have become, I totally feel that they would have become different people and accepted certain things because mommy accepted it. And I would uh-huh. never want that. I would never want that for them. And so I totally agree with you that they're learning lessons that we all had to learn. We were older and they're younger. And so I look uh-huh. at it as maybe, just maybe, she's a little bit ahead of the game more so than I was. And even though it's, you know, there's a big price tag that the kids have to pay, and it's change and it's back and forth and it's, you know, all of the stuff that goes with unraveling two lives. But at the end of it all, I just couldn't help but think that there's an opportunity for her for especially my daughter to see someone in my life, which actually I have the most amazing man for me in my life, and my kids just want to be around him. And my kids, they've never seen my hand held. They've never seen me hugged. They've never seen me kissed. They've never seen me, someone has my back when I say, hey, kids, do this. They've never seen that until now. And that is the greatest gift in the world that he's given me that I would never have without him in my life, ever. And my kids see that.
And I think that's so important that children see that, because that's what you want for them to have in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell parents to gauge when it comes to children. Would you want your daughter or son to be in a marriage like yours? And if the answer is no, well, then you have to stop. Because
right.
you're not setting any... And when parents tell me, well, my kids don't know we're unhappy, they're really only kidding themselves. Children know
right.
everything.
Right.
They know when
I
you're
agree.
Not happy. They hear you crying at night. They see that you're, you know, either drugged up, doped up, drunked up. You know, they see that you're doing all these things to numb yourself up. They're very perceptive. They don't think that you're happy. They know... They watch television, and they see what happy couples look like, and they see that's not happening in their home, right?
Right. Totally. They pick up on the energy so quickly, and we really can't fool them. And I think it's natural to move through that process a little bit where we think we're fooling them, and we think, you know, because
uh-huh.
we've just got this facade going on. But truly, they're going to shut down more. And I think what I did when I left is I looked at my daughter and I said, listen, I do not have all the answers, but what I do know for sure is I'm not throwing you under the bus and I'm not throwing me under the bus, and we are in this together and I've got your back. And all I know is you come to me if you have any questions. I will answer them as best and as honestly as I can. I'm here for you. But I didn't act like Superwoman. I took the cape off. And it actually was better for me and better for her. My son, again, I talk about my daughter more, just my son was so much older and I could have different conversations with her. But I would always communicate with my daughter and just let her know, hey, you know what? I got you. But I don't have all the answers. We're going through this together. But one thing you never have to question is my love or loyalty for you. And I promise you that someday you're going to understand a lot more than you do now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
and
that was
beautiful
all I...
thoughts. And that's why you two of you are so close. You know, that honesty in the relationship, right?
Yeah, I didn't want to make promises I couldn't keep. And I knew that she had her own cross to bear. And that kills me because as parents, we would do anything so that our kids didn't have to go through the things that they went through. And nobody knows that more than you, Bonnie. You would do anything for your children. And so... You know, you want to make it go away, but they're walking through the fire with you. And now to see my daughter, you know, to see my daughter and the way that she is with me and the way that she is with, you know, the love from the man that I have in my life, to see that is, I sit there and it could make me cry because she's a different person. And I never would
have
thought.
Before we have to go. I don't mean to cut you short at all, but how do people get to your website? Give them the web address.
Yeah, it's you can go to loveyourselftohealth.com.
Loveyourselftohealth.com.
Mm-hmm. Or JeanineFinelli.com, either one.
I think it's easier to go to loveyourselftohealth.com.
Yeah.
Only because people may not know all the spellings with the Janines, but I will certainly have it in the upcoming
right.
newsletter. But from your website, you know, you can learn a lot. You can buy your book, right?
Yep. You can buy the book. I do phone sessions, you know, in an
mm-hmm.
hour. We'll talk about what's eating you, what's going on, and you'll have a plan within 24 hours of how to get through it, whether it's eating, thinking, reacting, everything that's in my book. So I do phone sessions and the book. And I went through it, ladies, and that's why I'm so present and both feet in with, you know, with all of you, because it's part of my DNA now. It's part of who I am.
Yes, and like I say, the book is not only great for mental health, but it's great for physical health, of course, physical health, but also for emotional well-being. Everything is tied in to make you feel better, and it's a holistic approach on how to improve your whole life. And Janine,
mm-hmm.
I can hope and pray I'll actually get to see you in Virginia.
Yeah.
You're really not that far away, right?
No, I'm not. I'm not. I was just there last weekend in the snow for volleyball.
No public pressure, but, you know, maybe they're possible and you could do your workshop
there.
For our women,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, definitely, definitely.
All right,
I'm
going to keep hoping and keeping my fingers crossed. And, you know, I love you. You're one of the gifts to all of us. You truly are. It's such a blessing to know you, Janine. And thank you so much for being our guest, and you need to come back again sooner than later.
I will, I will. And ladies, you're not alone. I just want to leave you with that. You're not alone. The resources are there. Don't be afraid. And thank you,
thank
Bonnie,
you so
for
much.
All that you do.
And thank you, Janine. And love to all of our women. We'll be back here next week with our favorite Dr. Hooper, Doctor in the House. And have a wonderful week. And love to you all. And love, I love you, Janine.
I love you too, Bonnie.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.